Good evening. Welcome to the November Harbor Advisory Board meeting. We'll start out by having a roll call and let the record show that all are present. That was the roll call. Next item on the agenda is approval of the minutes, and I'll entertain a motion to either accept them or to revise and repair them.
I'd like to comment on one
small correction in the second paragraph. It says in the second sentence of the second paragraph, says it stated there are approximately 92 racks located from Krill's to Tideland Park. That should be 79 racks.
Okay. Very good. Anything else? Any others? I'll entertain a motion.
I move that we accept the October minutes as corrected.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Do we have any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Oral communications. Members of the audience wishing to address the board on city business matters, other than those on the agenda, may do so now. If you would come up, state your name, and tell us what you have to say. I don't hear an awful lot of thundering feet, so we'll continue on to the next action item, and that will be newspaper racks on the waterfront. And I believe we have a presentation by our member Jim Phillips.
That's correct. Thank you very much. Last month's meeting, I made this presentation, but just prior to doing so, we received a notice from Rob Schultz, the city attorney, and he provided us with about 3 pages of legal references having to do with court case, please. And then another example is the end of Pacific Street? And the last one is the view from the Bayside Cafe overlooking the State Park Marina. The total number of racks that you find from Grills to Tylands Park is 79. And if you add the 13 that are in front of the Bayside Cafe, you have a total of 92 newspaper and or advertising racks. The city of Morro Bay certainly has some more pressing problems, I'm sure, than looking into the legality of and the placement of these machines. But I think considering that the city's interest is in attracting tourism, and these do have an effect on what people see. They come to see the rock, and they come to see the sand spit and the boats, and what they see, if they're 4 foot tall anyway, is a line of newspaper racks. I'd like to make it clear, too, that newspapers, as opposed to advertising, newspapers have a constitutional First Amendment right to making free speech available to public and public places. And what I say about the newspaper racks are really not about the newspapers themselves, but what I'm referring to are the advertisements. And if there's any way of showing it, there's some of those that were picked up out of these racks just as a display. And I'm questioning whether there's any constitutional guarantee to extend to advertisers such as Auto Trader and Photo Ad and Easy Ad and Vintage and Travel, Coupon Guide and others to have the same kind of rights that newspapers have. The largest number of the vending machines contain advertising is three, that is free to those who take a copy. This free material often becomes the litter that shop owners and city staff and volunteers have to clean up when it's taken out of the racks, looked at, and then tossed here or there. The vending machines, in my view of things, are ugly and they're a distraction. and provide some regulation to, you know, some way of regulating the problem to a certain extent anyway. In light of that, I'd like to make the following proposal. I'll give the send those down. Make the following proposal. I'll read it, and then I'd like to recommend that the City Council investigate what legal limitations can be placed on non-commercial vending machines along the Embarcadero and on the water side of the State Park Marina. Some of these considerations may include, could the city ban all vending machines from the water side of the Embarcadero? There's discussions in the legal information here about different placements of things, from limited public forum places to public forum places and such as that. And I'm not sure what all of those legal definitions mean, but it would be an asset to the to the view of Morro Bay to have them away from that waterfront side. I would like to know if the city could limit vending machines to newspapers only. The law seems to differentiate between commercial and non-commercial papers. Some court cases have considered that both of them have the same First Amendment rights, but then there's other court cases that have said that the non-commercials can be more rigorously regulated than the commercial ones. I'd like to know if could the city limit where vending machines are placed by defining public forum and non-public forum areas, leaving the most view-oriented spaces free of their clutter. Again, I don't know what public forum and non-public forum means in any legal sense, but apparently if there is a city-designated public forum area, then newspapers have a right to be there. If it's a non-public forum area, then apparently the city would have some ability to control what's in those places. And I don't know how these are defined within the city or if, in fact, they are. C, could the city require legal vendors to provide more attractive vending machines? I don't know it for a fact, but I've been told by other people that some cities have taken that approach so that they, you know, at least standardize them and make them look more attractive by forcing vending machines, then fees are more likely to be upheld. Those represent the proposals I would like to pass on to the city in whatever manner or form that can happen.
Okay.
That's it.
Then basically, if I understand this, then you're making this as a motion to recommend to the City Council that they look at these 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We have two.
There's
A's.
Two A's. Well, yeah.
Okay.
I thought there was five there.
And yeah. Anyhow, is that your motion?
That would be it. Yes, I would move that we ask the city to take a look at these five areas.
Okay. Do I have a second?
Second.
We have a motion. We have a second. Okay, we have discussion. Do you still have some additional?
That's all I have.
Okay.
To say yes.
Okay. Anyone having questions, et cetera? Ed?
Yeah, well, when you designate commercial and non-commercial, in reality, they're all commercial. I mean, they're all in business. They all sell advertisement. Some of them don't charge for their free papers, and some of them they charge for a quarter for the Telegram, Tribune, or whatever it is. So I'm not sure that you might want to make a distinction between that somehow, but the council could do that. And as far as I'm concerned, what I've read with this report that the attorney gave us, that no matter what you do, you could be sued by these people. Considering what they've done in the past, I would say that the city could probably charge them some kind of a rent. After all, they're in business, and people that are in business are using city property to promote their businesses. You could probably get away with charging them a minimal rent of some kind. As far as, you know, that's all I've got to say about it. Otherwise, I'd go ahead and pass these on to the council and let them do what they want. They're going to do it anyway.
I wonder if I'm wondering if the last one, the rent on for picking up the trash is really the primary objective here. It seems that you're far more interested in the appearance, and that maybe this should be limited to the appearance rather than trying to solve the two problems. One is getting some...
And asking the city or the city attorney to look into the fees applied to non-commercial racks might result, for instance, in the reduction in number of them, because if you look at some of them, the same advertiser has three or four racks in the same area, so there's a kind of an overkill in some cases of having more than what they would have maybe otherwise if they had to pay some kind of a fee for each of those boxes that they fill full of advertising.
Anything more, Lynn?
Yeah, I think that one of the concerns I had in reading through this, and I'm in full agreement that they're an eyesore, but to get into a legality issue that's going to eat up a lot of the city attorney's time, I think he probably has more important things to do. But if some of these might end up getting the city into litigation, the one that has the most attraction as a simple solution is just banning them completely on the west side of the, on the water side of the street. That would not be taking away their right to distribute their materials. If they were across the street against the bank or whatever, they're not blocking the views, and they certainly couldn't cry foul as far as their ability to make their materials available to the public. I mean, they couldn't possibly contend that people were unable to walk across the street. It's not like outlawing them completely. So that would be what I'd like to see looked at as at the very least as a most workable solution if indeed there were litigation issues that might come up.
I think I figured out how to solve the legal aspect. It's the definition of the commercial speech. We could more or less just say it's define it as viewshed enemy combatant literature. And then we don't have to worry about the freedom of speech requirements and like. No, I agree with Roger. If we can just push things to the east side of the Embarcadero, that might be the solution.
Anyone else?
Can I kind of join your discussion here? Because I did talk it over with Rob a little more, too, and I've been thinking, I think about process and how we might be successful in promoting this. And Roger's been up in the chair on the council. And if you just give them a good idea, most people extend a little bit different, but kind of the same way they built, you know, required a certain design, and they're in designated speech areas and they're readily accessible. And so I was wondering if, you know, if we have at least one board member who's very interested in this, and I would be willing to sort of staff a subcommittee if you wanted to work up even some concrete proposals. Either it's, we'll check into this, we could, hopefully it wouldn't take a lot of time, but we could get the sample ordinances from Santa Barbara and Carmel, and then that's sort of a different concept. Just a ban on the west side might be relatively simple if we think that might fly. Legally, that's a good, solid proposal, and perhaps you want to just forward that up to council tonight. But it might be nice to know the answer, you know, for sure or pretty clearly whether that really is a legally defensible position, because I'm not sure at this point. It sounds pretty good. Or we could look at the idea of design and designating a certain design and make it, as long as we make it reasonable, we have a good protection. And if you came up with some specific proposals in that area, you probably would be more likely to get council to pick it up, or if you've got an answer to the legal question on your one proposal here, rather than just kicking it up saying, well, sounds good to us, we'd like you to do it.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, please.
As the maker of the motion and the proposal, I would much rather to do that if we can investigate it further here before sending it to the council, because obviously what I've proposed are from my interpretations of what he wrote, and I do think that somewhere it would satisfy all of my concerns if through the, for example, the definition of public forum and non-public forum places, we could in effect as the city could in effect designate places on the other side of the Embarcadero for these machines, then that would take care of all of the complaints, I think. So
very well, then what we have right now is we have a motion and we have a second. We would have to have the motion withdrawn and the second withdrawn.
I withdraw the motion regarding the proposal.
Withdraw the second.
Very well. Then, from what I understand, then you will get together with Rick.
I will.
And you will put together some kind of a. We'll see. you'll put together some kind of a proposal. That will be sent ultimately to the city council.
What you do to build community support for this idea and understanding, it might be better. So, and Jim's taken it on. He seems interested. Right away, it seems to me, if you've got a proposal, why not make a presentation to the Planning Commission? Why not bring it back to the board? I mean, build some support and as these meetings are heard and people hear about it. And then you send it off to the council. If you've got a good, solid proposal and you've got some background on it and it's based on other ordinances that have been successful. So, I would recommend that we put this on the agenda again in December and okay. Let's see if we can report back to you or keep it going. And, you know, you may be, I mean, this takes time, but eventually sure. You can get it to council as kind of a package with some public support because you're going to ask a new project. Mm-hmm.
Very well.
Okay. That's good to me.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Let's see. We are now... Does anyone else have any comments or anything to do with this particular subject? Because I'm going to close it and move on to the next action item. We still have a quorum. Okay. Next action item, number 4-2. Coastal Conservancy grant for a transition to a more sustainable fisheries on the Central Coast. Rick, would you like to?
Thank you. And I would note that Mr. Ewing has stepped down for this item. We have prepared the attached grant proposal after 2 or 3 months of working to try and basically look at the ideas of how we go forward with fishing in this community. The trawl buyback hit us hard that we learned about last year with the Nature Conservancy and Environmental Defense purchasing the trawl permits in this area, basically all of them at this point. And we greatly reduced landings. There's a lot to be said, pro and con, about whether that was a good thing or a bad thing, but it's a fact. So now we are working on how we restore landings, keep people employed, keep our infrastructure, keep the business to the extent we can, and potentially recreate our markets, since right now we have a really broken market situation. And this, we've had this discussion before, so I know to some extent we're repeating ourselves. The Harbor Advisory Board, I thought, put together a really good letter that outline the boat and the permit from Nature Conservancy. There's two that are here right now that were purchased. Two have been demolished, and two are still at the piers owned by Nature Conservancy. That'd be South Bay and the Molly. We were looking at those boats and thinking, you know, their permits allow them to trawl at this time. Many of the environmental groups don't like the trawl as it became in modern times, sometimes with very heavy doors and big bobbins or rollers and almost able to go over almost any type of bottom, including rocky bottoms. So why not work on the gear and make it so it can only fish in the sand or mud, not go over rocky bottoms, so that it can reduce bycatch by modifying the gear, so we can get the two key things that were objectionable was bottom habitat disruption and bycatch. We can reduce or almost eliminate those problems. Then this is a great way to catch fish and land fish. And as we've noted, a lot of people have noted in the last year since the trawler buyback, we can't get Petrolli sole here anymore, even though there's very, very healthy stocks in the ocean. In our area, there's no real way to catch them without this trawl gear. So what we put together here is an idea that we will subsidize some of the costs in operating, modifying the net to reduce bycatch and to lighten up the doors and to lighten up the gear and make a smaller net targeted for mud and sand areas. We're calling it low impact trawl. We'll pay the fuel costs and the net modification costs. The skipper, we have two potential skippers, but one of them is on your board, and that's why he stepped down, is Ed Ewing, who has about 35 years experience trawling, who are willing to take the chance of putting together a crew and run the boat under a lease with Nature Conservancy, where they'll have to market the fish, and if they catch fish and sell it, they can make money. And if they don't, then they'll still be out their costs, and even though we'll be subsidizing fuel. So we have a couple of people, and it's primarily Ed, who are interested in trying it, and I appreciate that because it's going to come. So that's an exciting prospect. I don't know if we can make it work. I think we can. We're trying to also get separate funding for observers so that we'll have a good scientific report on. But this is an economic experiment. We're seeing if this can work. And then $25,000 goes to that. $30,000 goes to that for black cod for now, for at least for these traps. And there's some other reasons why people are trying to fish them now, including the open access fishery is probably going to limited entry. So they're trying to get a catch history in some cases. But it's making money. So we hope that we can reinvent ourselves, and we just got to get out of the old trawl market-dominated rut that we were in. Yes, sir.
Is the black cod that you're talking about, is that also referred to as the sable fish?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, that's. I was down at Dockside 2, and Mark Toganzini gave me a little taste of that. It's a delicious fish.
Was it good?
Oh, yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I'm... Yeah, I've heard mixed messages, and I've heard some. I mean, it's a very highly prized fish in some markets, and then some people don't care for it. So, but we've been seeing it get some of these wild caught fish now. If marketing is such a key part of this, we have huge markets here in this country, but they've generally been dominated by low cost fish, not always caught here in this country. And so, we're finding that there is demand now for the cachet, if you can say. That this is caught in a sustainable manner. If you can market it through the person who caught it or a brand, say Morro Bay, known as a port that has sustainable fishing practices. So that's where we're targeting with this marketing, to try and get to raise the profile of Morro Bay, to make the market connections with these fisheries as we develop them. And $70,000 would go toward business plan to hopefully re-inventory our assets here in terms of what's left for commercial fishing and try and document some of the socioeconomic issues that we really have never tried to. We never had the money to get documented, at least as it is now, in some history. And then to look at how we go forward, and I suspect it's going to work out a business plan that's going to include this infrastructure that I think we still need to build on there by the old Cordero Winston dock, the city dock, where we're finally going to get this ice machine in, I think, where things are really going the right way. I hope this winter we'll get the ice machine in. Then we'll need to look at the next things, which are probably going to be blast freezers and some cutting space and some dry storage and some to keep building and, slow but sure as if we can recreate ourselves. So this is a proposal that's in front of the Coastal Conservancy. It will go to City Council. We did make an action item. I hope that the Coastal Conservancy Board will approve it. After they do that, then we'll take it to City Council at their meeting in December, I think we'll have to.
If you identify yourself.
I'm Ed Ewing, and I'm pleased to be trying this, and I hated to see our fisheries go downhill like they have, and it's not because of the stock issue, I believe. And when they decided that they were going to buy these trawl permits, I had a chat with the Nature Conservancy for 3 hours to tell them the history of Morro Bay and what we used to do in the old days, and how in 1980 we asked that the government not put big roller nets and not allow them down here. They did anyway. We had no choice, and we thought it was wrong then. So back in the old days before the roller nets and before the big draggers came down here, we always had four or five draggers working out of Morro Bay and three or four out of Avila. Smaller gear, less power. And they didn't use the rollers. They used chain gear. They couldn't go anywhere near the rocks. Well, the chain gear is not so hot either because it has a tendency to to dig a little bit, and it is pretty dirty. So I thought that if we just took the rollers off and went to 7-inch disc and smaller doors and smaller nets, lower head rope height, that we could probably run a sustainable trawl fishery with 4 or 5 draggers here. And we need that to keep these docks going. It's always been our mainstay. Albacore comes and goes. Some years there's a lot of them. Some years there's same with salmon, same with crab. But for a mainstay for Morro Bay, it's always been bottom fish. And there's always been draggers here since 1968 that I've been here, and before that in the 50s. So, and in the old days, they couldn't go over the rocks, so there never was a conflict between the hook and line boats and the draggers. We got along just fine. So if the draggers went back to fishing Dover Sole, Petrolli Sole, and they'll get slope rock fish, they'll get some, and that's part of the quota, it's part of the government quota, it's no problem with the rosies and certain types of slope rock fish. The shallower rock fish they want to stay away from. In the long run, if we can get this started and get our infrastructure back and get it working and get our marketing going, it's better to catch less fish and get more money for them than it is to kill a lot of fish for less money. It's obvious. And that's what part of the marketing is. And so all the way around, it could work out that part of the quotas that the Nature Conservancy bought, they were talking about switching them over for the black cod and stuff for the trap boats here and for the hardheads and some of the slope rock fish for hook and line boats. And it's a long-term project, but we'd also like to have some ITQs for local community fishing boats here and try to preserve the area from Point Sur to Lopez from Point Arguello to Point Sur for local boats. A lot of fishermen didn't really like that idea, and I said, well, you know, bottom fish aren't that migratory. They're not like salmon and albacore and guys go fishing all down the coast. What we have here is a small quota for this area. And what happens is if they fill the quota up north, other boats would come down here and start filling this one up. And then the local fishermen couldn't take advantage of it. And that's happened several times. So that's in the future, in the long run. But for the short term, we just like to get a sustainable trawl going for the community and try to get our infrastructure back in place and our marketing going and try to do something that's going to be long-lasting that the environmentalists will support. So that's basically it.
Thank you. Okay. I'm going to bring it back to the board now, and I'll start with you, Lynn. Do you have any?
Well, I'm really glad to see so many people.
Microphone?
I'm sorry. I don't like it. I'm glad to see the proposal out here and that people are working on something to get the fishermen going again. It's awful to have to talk about it and bemoan it and not do any real work toward an objective. So I think this is wonderful. A couple of questions on the thing, though. On page 3, project progress to date. I'm kind of confused because it says $50,000 a year for 3 years, 05 to 07, to keep the wharf in operation. So that means actually 2 of these years have already passed and there's 1 more year left, right? This proposal started a couple of years ago and is just ongoing. It's not just starting.
Well, I think what you're looking at there is that we listed other funding. So what the first category is what we're asking the grant, $130,000 at this point.
Okay.
The second category is what we've indicated that we tried to show our in-kind support or other support, so that it's always good to show that you're leveraging the project with other places. So Nature Conservancy, I should mention again, because it's really a show of good faith, in my opinion. They granted the MBCFO $50,000 a year for 3 years to offset the losses, to offset costs at the operation of the dock, and it's been a lifesaver.
Okay, so that is money.
That's indicated there, and that part's done. The other part's in the future.
Yeah. And the boat is supposed to be outfitted with this new gear and ready to go by next month?
I hope.
Pretty amazing. It's complicated with the time because we have an individual who's jamming to go, and the paperwork will take some time, so I don't know. We're going to have to work it out with the paperwork, but he has an arrangement. He's the individual, Mr. Ewing, I think, is working with the Nature Conservancy on the lease on the boat, which there's some things to be done there because that's a third-party arrangement. They will work those issues out, and the lease on the boat and the permit. And then we'll have to work out the money, how we'll subsidize the thing, sort of, that can possibly follow, I think. He might be able to go forward with his project right now, it looks like, and get it all ready.
So the gear is essentially done? No. Okay.
I'm building it as we speak.
Well, it's all there, in a way, all except for, I don't know if Ed wants to speak to this, but there's a lot of material on the two boats that can be modified, including some really good, lightweight, very modern doors, smaller doors, which happen to be really good for this. So it's just a matter of putting it all together.
Okay.
Jim?
I have just a few questions that are related to my education here. The Environmental Defense and the Nature Conservancy, are they private or state organizations, or what can you say about them that would help me understand what they are?
TNC, I believe, is international, and Environmental Defense is a major long-term national non-governmental organization supporting environmental protection.
So non-governmental, right?
Yeah.
Is that the same thing as saying private?
More like non-profit.
Yeah, non-profit.
Environmental
non-profit
type
staff
operation.
Yeah, it's an action.
Is that true of the Nature Conservancy also?
You know, I presume they're also a non-profit. I have never checked into that, but let's assume that that's,
They're not a state or...
No, they're not a public agency, non-governmental agency. Yeah.
I think you just mentioned this low-impact skip seine gear. Is that that's the... Is that a...
The name was a bit of a moving target. Skip seine sounded kind of cute. We liked that for a while. Turned out it wasn't a seine. It wasn't legally. What we were proposing to do didn't fit into the legal description of seining. So we really decided, skip seine sounds great, or skip net fishing sounded really cute too, but, you know, cute wasn't good. So we needed to go with the more honest. It's low impact trawl, which is exactly
meaning what it doesn't tear up the bottom, or?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. You just mentioned that black cod is a sable fish, or that's another name for it. Is the black cod like the blue rockfish that we catch out here, or anything similar to that?
No.
They will be unloading a bunch of black cod boats tomorrow, and some sword, I think, at 9 o'clock in the morning, too. So
okay.
It's an ugly fish.
Several of them are ugly out there.
Some uglier than others.
Some uglier.
Black cod, not too bad on the ugly scale.
How would you define optimal landing mix for me? It's an objective 3, develop plan, transition plan, in effect, identify optimal landing mix.
Well, that's probably a reference to one of our biggest problems is to, we need to key into the market. Instead of having the market tell us when we could, when they might buy some fish at a reasonable price, we need to figure out what the markets are and what they want, and then build that and provide them what they want with some stability. So I think that's probably the reference to the, we need to, target the species that the market wants to pay for in the volumes that they can handle them, and then build stability. And to do that, we're going to have to all work together. Our fishermen are going to have to work together to some extent, too. And this is where I think kind of goes back to the idea that Ed is talking about, that's a little bit, not exactly this idea, but it's something we're working on a lot behind the scenes, is the idea of a community quota or community management area that would allow us to have an allocation for our area that for groundfish, because for a lot of species that's scary, and species that transit, and we're not talking about excluding folks that have already well-managed fisheries such as albacore and salmon, but for groundfish, where we're really hurting because of such poor stock assessment, so little is known, they're generally very deep water, they're west coast wide, they're managed generally in a west coast wide basis, and big trawlers up in Seattle, if they take all the fish, then we're closed down on here, which is crazy.
because you know that we have a still very vibrant resource up here. It's just not a good manager. It'd be a much better to manage it for our community, and that way, if we could get an allocation for this area, we could work with in ourselves to work the markets better and to work our area markets and improve price. So this kind of hints probably at those ideas, but that's a long-range project, although there are people who are receptive to those ideas and on the Pacific Fisheries Management Council.
Thanks. Are the Petrolli Sole and Dover Sole caught outside the marine protected areas? Are they out in deep water? How deep?
There's only a few trawls that are allowed in California waters within 3 miles. Very specific, few areas left, and very few trawls that are allowed in California waters. So almost all of this is federal. What we're talking about is federally regulated fishing activity in federal waters.
And those fish are generally caught outside of 1,000 fathoms.
1,000 fathoms.
1,000 fathoms.
1,000 feet, excuse me.
1,000 feet, yeah. That's, yeah. Yeah, okay. So about 1,000 feet. So they're deep water species.
Mm-hmm. Just a couple more, if you don't mind. On page 8, which the pages aren't numbered, so that doesn't help much, but you mentioned two other groups, Fishwise Program of Sustainable Fishery Advocates and Clean Fish. Can you tell me anything about those two?
Yeah, they're two buyers, sort of new age buyers, you might call them, for lack of a better word. They're folks who are got in, and they're becoming substantial buyers in the Bay Area, mostly going direct into high-end supermarkets and restaurants that want the fish that is can be, their customers want fish that is wild but sustainably caught. Usually they're keyed into the Marine Steward, the MSC certification, or either the aquariums watch list or some kind of designation that they know the provenance of the fish, where it came from, and then the way it's caught. So those, and those seem to be emerging markets, especially for us, where we're no longer in the mass. The trawl fish delivers 20 or 30,000 pounds in one trip, where we're looking at smaller trawls, smaller lower trips, lower landings. We need to maximize the market price.
Okay. One last one. Page 9, under government reform, just this sentence, it's filled with my favorite acronyms. Of special concern is the PFMC's current project to implement IFQ/ITQs.
Code.
I know what the PFMC is, but I haven't been able to figure out what the IFQ.
Individual fisherman's quota.
Individual fisherman's quota. Individual, what's the IT?
The ITQ is an individual's transferable quota.
Okay.
Thanks. Yeah, and they're interchangeable. The quota concept is very controversial. There's other all kinds of different buzzwords that kind of mean the same idea. What are the environmental defense, he has another name for it that's a allocated something. Anyway, it's basically the idea of taking what's allowed and dividing it up amongst the people who harvest it. And this has worked in other areas to some extent in Alaska and to some extent in New Zealand and Australia. And there's even great argument over those areas, whether it's been a good thing or a bad thing, whether it's consolidated into corporate ownership, but some people feel that it's a good way to manage the fisheries, and many of the folks involved in the fisheries, if they're in and they would get a quota, they like it, would add value to their business, especially if it's transferable. So big issues, big factors, and especially in the ground fish, the Pacific Fisheries Management Council is moving in this direction, has been for 3 or 4 years, quite slowly, and many of the folks that are in the trawl fishery would like to see it happen as long as it's done in such a way as in a right way. But then a lot of other folks are concerned about it. So, sorry, go on and on, but it's just a huge complex area and you find very, very strong feelings on both sides of the issue. So we're trying not to get too much involved in that other than we talk about community quota or community management as a part of that concept where they could allocate for our area because we have such a little access. I mean, there's so little access here with boats between Monterey and Santa Barbara now, and we have such amazing ground still left over, fish resources we're almost sure about, even though the stock assessments aren't good. We'd just like a chance to manage for our area and manage for boats fishing out of our area so that the fish are landed in this port to help our infrastructure.
Thank you. I want to just say that I'm very much in favor of what you're putting forth here as your effort to revitalize the commercial fishing aspects of Morro Bay.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to let Gene go first, and then I'll get back to you. Gene?
I'm supportive of this. I think Rick's done a lot of work on this. That's all I need to say.
I just had another question.
Is that on?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
My question. When you're talking about a locally managed area, would that be just for fishermen who are out of Morro Bay? Boats that are registered with their home port being Morro Bay, or?
Good question. And you know, how the details would all work out, I mean, I can see good and bad about that idea. Some people, I think that's kind of what Ed was talking about. I think it's the most important thing is that we manage our stocks locally, and we want to see the fish landed in Morro Bay and Port San Luis.
Okay.
So, you know,
they would be offloaded in Port San Luis.
Yeah. Or Port San Luis. Yeah. Morro Bay, if that was your question, yeah, Morro Bay, Port San Luis.
But the fishermen themselves and the boats could have come from.
Well, and we're talking about ground fish now, and that's an open question how that works out. Some see it one way, some see it others. To me, I think the important point is that the fish has landed here.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, as far as I can see, it has a win-win situation here for our commercial fishermen and for our harbor. One thing you might consider when you're talking about marketing, remember what the Alaskan spider crab, they called it the king crab and they couldn't sell it fast enough. So maybe you call the black rock cod, maybe it's the Pacific black snapper.
The government won't let you do that. It's called truth in advertising. It's California law.
Okay. I will entertain a motion that we go with Rick's recommendation that we, excuse me a second, that the Harbor Advisory Board review the attached grant proposal and recommend City Council approval, provided that the grant agreement is approved by the Coastal Conservancy. I'm asking for a motion.
I move that we do just that.
Okay.
Second.
Good. Thank you. Is there any further discussion? In that case, I will close this and invite Ed back to his seat. We have next on the, we go to information items, and we get an oral presentation on NEP, Fish and Game Back Bay Cleanup.
Yeah, good evening again. I have to report that I'm a failure on this item. Dean Heilman of Fish and Game had an unavoidable other work conflict tonight, and Dan Berman of the NEP was going to try and come by. But he also had something else going on, and I didn't get the latest word for him. So since he's not here, I'll just have to kind of give you this report. I know Dan wanted to try, and I hope if he walks in, we'll see, because he was saying he might be able to show up between 8 and 8:30. Let's hope we might hope that the meeting's over by then, but it might be. But this was a successful program, I think, for the most part. I think we're down to one boat back there, and I believe that that boat has just recently, the court resolved to Fish and Game's control. So it's good. The money, as that was received from the CMC Fines, the Regional Water Quality Control Board, been very helpful and been fully expanded, and we're actually could use some additional funds. That's the current discussion now, that one that we might, you might be able to help me with, because we did, that CMC grant also included some money for a mobile pump out, and we have not executed that part of it yet. And I think a lot of us see that there probably is more priority on trying to clean up. We still have about six or seven vessels that were Back Bay vessels that are now at city facilities. Some of them came to us in the terms that they would have to pay 60 days in advance, I think is what Sue got, or was it 30? 30 days in advance, and they're already falling behind. And we've got some other vessels that we can already see are, you know, so we've got Back Bay vessels that are going to be problems. Right now they've become city problems, which is okay. I mean, we kind of knew that was going to happen. But we can see that there's going to be additional costs, and we'd like to continue doing this. So I think we'll go ahead and suggest to the, if we can, to the Regional Water Quality Control Board, that that money that was for the mobile pump out for now be put toward continuing to have funds ready to work on derelict vessels and demolishing them. There was about four or five vessels that I think a week ago or 2 weeks ago we got rid of Gina, which was not a Back Bay boat, but that was one that was sank in, I think, January or February or March, and the South Tiber owner died in summer, and we got possession of it and just took care of it because of lack of responsible party of it. And it was at our facility. So that one we paid for. The others were paid for by the NEP Back Bay funds. We got rid of four or five vessels, I think, at that time. So all in all, I mean, it's, you know, the National Estuary Program and Dean Heilman of the Fish and Game and the Fish and Game Department, I deserve a lot of credit for getting all that cleaned up, but we still got a few problems. The sea is the next on the, that's a Back Bay boat, and that one needs to be resolved, and there's a few legal things with that, but it has, I think it's now at our, is it in front of, it's in front of our office now. Like, it was in our slip, and that one's to be disposed of within the next month or two.
Okay. Any questions? I'll let you go first there, Gene. Yeah. Jim?
Ed? No, it's good that they're disappearing back there. Ed? Thank you.
Lynn, turn it on.
No.
Okay. Yeah, I'm real pleased. We every now and then get in our canoe and paddle back there to the bayside and have a hamburger. And it's really nice to go by that place and not see all those derelicts. So, however, I did notice that they have migrated, some of them, up to the North Teep here. They're really buttes. But yeah. What are we going to do? Anyhow.
Well, and I'd like to say that the Harbor Advisory Board deserves a lot of credit for letting us, you know, I mean, for not letting us, because it was, but for pushing this issue up to the council and the council pushing it, and you know, something did get done, and it's...
I think we can say thank you to everybody, and especially I'd like to give a real attaboy to Dean Heilman.
He really deserves it.
The yeoman's job.
Putting heart and soul in it.
Yeah.
And Dan Berman did a great job getting the money.
Go ahead.
Rick, you know, once those boats are gone back there, then that channel that runs back there is not so easily seen or identified. And for the people that are not familiar with that, when they head for the State Park Marina, they run into that sandbar that's there. And I know the channel markers that go into the State Park Marina are put out there by the managers of the state park, but they don't quite identify the end of that sand spit very well, so that it would be really helpful, I think, to have a couple more markers, buoys, kind of outlining the end of that sandbar, just to keep them from heading across that way.
I know where that sandbar is. I spent about 6 hours one night.
I have.
Gene? No? Very well. If there's no more discussion on that particular item, we'll move on to the Harbor Department status report. And do we get Holly or do we get Rick?
Hello? Can you stand by just a second?
Okay. We will all hum the Star Spangled Banner under our breath.
Holly just brought to my attention that if there was possible we didn't record a vote on item number two on the grant. Could we?
Item number two on the grant.
But we didn't quick it in. I'm sorry, I missed that.
Oh, I guess I missed it too then. Then.
I think each of us individually said we supported
it. Okay, then we do have a motion, we do have a second, and all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Come on back, Ed.
Thank you.
Okay, Harbor Department's status report.
Okay, just one moment. Okay. We did receive a grant for, I think we reported this at your last meeting, I can't remember if this is news to you or not at this point, it's all blending together, but the Evan Budenhagen, one of our officers on his initiative, made an application to the National Estuary Program to ask them to pay for some additional oil spill response equipment for immediate deployment. It's something actually that's been, we've been light here on for quite a while. There used to be more resources when Chevron and Clean Seas were around and they had gear. PG&E had quite a bit more spill response stuff on their site in the old days. And so at this time, there is a great program for the Integrated Waste Management Board that gives us free diapers, but most other materials we not only have to pay for, but the disposal part of it is really expensive. Now, the Coast Guard has a lot of materials, but not much here. Most of that has to is quite a complicated process to get it opened up from the Marines MSO, Coast Guard MSO. So, and then Osprey, there's two agencies that are technically responsible for oil spill response. On the federal level, it's Coast Guard MSO. State level, it's oil spill Fish and Game Oil Spill Prevention and Response Office. And you call those folks in and they get here, but there's that first hour, two, three, when you're the only folks, when we're first responders with usually local Coast Guard personnel, and whatever we have here, we can often do quite a lot of it good in deploying it. So that was the purpose. NEP saw the value in it. The National Estuary Program awarded the grant for $38,000. It's to buy and dispose of the material. So we took that to council. Council agreed, authorized, executed the grant. It's done. We're now in the market shopping for the materials, and I think Evan's doing that. And I'll say Evan deserves a lot of credit for showing initiative, and so this is all a good thing. I warned all our officers, you know, as typical management being anal, I'm concerned that we not do beyond what our training and capability is. It's only for immediate response. As soon as OSPR or Coast Guard MSO arrive, they're take over the scene and we aid them under their direction. And responsible party for all of the spill is always the boat owner or the responsible party, if it's not a boat. Wherever the generator is, a responsible party. Those folks have to pick up the costs. We can get our material costs reimbursed. We're just trying to put ourselves in a position to improve the situation in an immediate emergency response. So it's good. Now, Holly, I think, was going to do some of the rest of this.
Okay, the Lighted Boat Parade is scheduled for Saturday, December 2nd. Entry forms are available at Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce and at the Morro Bay Harbor Office. The parade starts at 6:30 p.m. Participants in the parade should be at the launch ramp ready to get their numbers from 3 o'clock to 5 o'clock p.m. The tall ship Lady Washington will be arriving in Morro Bay on November 30th. The Lady Washington will be decked out in lights and will be leading the Lighted Boat Parade this year. They'll also be having shoreside tours from 9 a.m. to noon and adventure sails in the afternoons. Contact Chamber of Commerce, 772-4467 for additional information.
The City Council actions on October 23rd, 06, approval of the revised Harbor Department rules and regulations, approval of 6-year extension to lease site 113W, review and approval of city's lease management policy. Now, this next one's a tongue twister, but I'm going to try it anyway. Support for hyperspectral and multispectral data collection. Last year, SLOC, its data on mapping the bottom of the bay, is the data was collected. The technology provides detailed information about bathymetry and topography of the Morro Bay estuary. SciCorps is the agency that does the collection, determining whether to continue the study in our area. Attached is a letter of support for the continuance of these studies. The data will be useful for all agencies involved in local management / jurisdiction of the Morro Bay estuary. Over. Read that part. Okay. This is important, though. The hybrid vehicle. The city recently purchased a Ford Escape hybrid as a replacement vehicle for the old Ford van. The hybrid is expected to get 30 miles per gallon, twice the mileage of the old van. The vehicle is partially funded by a grant from the USDA. And finally, the waterfront boardwalk project was put out to bid, and the bid should be in by mid-November.
That's a project of interest to the board, I know, and I'm watching it too carefully. I'll be watching to see how the bids come in, because I think the available funds now are about $1.6 million, and you know, we hope that it's going to come in closer under that, but it'll be some issues if it doesn't.
Okay.
In reference to the hybrid vehicle, is that USDA, the United States Department of Agriculture?
Yeah. Yeah, we got a grant for a third of the cost of that, two PWCs and a bunch of radios for their emergency response and homeland security grant programs. They were real good to work with. What the heck? Yeah.
One more question. Hyperspectral and multispectral, is that just really just a mapping of the contours of the bottom of the bay?
Three-dimensional chart. Mm-hmm. You can put it on your computer or you can print one out.
Okay.
Bathymetrics, what it is, it gives you the shading areas and the depths and the curves.
Yeah, good. Thank you very much.
Okay, anyone else? Okay, additional comments? Anyone with any additional comments? No? Moving on, future agenda items. We will put on the agenda the report back from Rick and Jim regarding the vending machines. Any others that you would like to recommend?
I would like to just have if there's anything further to report on what's happening with the State Park Marina in regards to...
Good. I was about to jump in there, too. We hit a hold period about August, I think I was telling you, that we were hoping to release the EIR for public comment. We had an opportunity. That was when the grant came in from DBW. We got some additional grant money to do some engineering review of the plans, and when we did that, we realized that it probably would be really good to take that a little further and refine the EIR before we went public. So it's on, the EIR is on hold again while we are doing this engineering work with DBW, and we've got Moffin and Nichols actually working on some layouts and some other things. So things are happening. I would like to try to put it on your agenda for December. Okay. Let's try to do that.
Okay.
And we'll try to make it as big a presentation. We've been hoping to, you know, have the draft EIR out for public release. I don't know that I'll have that, but if nothing else, maybe I'll see if I can get the engineer down here or something.
I think that also, if we have anything that we're allowed to talk about, the little problem that we're looking at down in the by the boat haul out facility.
So the Martini yeah. Picard dock. Well, I really can tell you what there is on that, which is it's the city council has authorized litigation to resolve the issues about who owns the dock, and we have not filed the litigation yet. The city's council is speaking to the council of Martini
Pekarik's council, and that's all there is to report at this point. You know, we can put it on the agenda if you want.
Well, I'm not saying put it on the agenda so much as I am, if there is something to report, okay. We would like to see it if we could.
And
thank you.
Okay.
Any other agenda items? Then we move on to the next one. And we have a motion and a second. No discussion. We are adjourned.